Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning. It's a dual show, actually. The beginning part will be the good folks from Long-Term Care Insurance Program. I almost said partners. Am I allowed to say partners?
Well, it is Long-Term Care Partners, Bob.
Okay.
It's a federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program.
Okay. Now, the second half is going to be easy. We have two folks from Aetna, right? Did I do that right? Okay, so we're going to split the time, but so let's start off with the folks from Long-Term Care Partners, Paul Fort, and Paul is the Chief Executive Officer.
Well, right? Good morning, Bob. It's nice to be here.
And it's good to have you. And Beth O'Brien, and Beth is the Manager of Sales, Strategy, and Implementation.
Morning. How you doing?
Good. Does that involve calculus and the third derivative?
No, I avoid that at all costs.
Okay. So you all just came off a very successful open season. You tore the proverbial cover off the ball. Tell us
yes,
about it.
Yes, we did.
And tell us
how
you were so successful.
I'm delighted to be able to tell you about that. We had more than 45,000 people enroll during the three-month open season between April 4th and June 24th. Now, to give you an idea of how many people that is, that's a 20% increase to the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program, already the largest in the nation, but it brings us up over 270,000 enrollees. And as impressive as those numbers are, I think the activity that we generated was even more impressive. We had over 1 million hits to our website, ltcfeds.com, with over 500,000 hits to the rate quote calculator. We held about 800 meetings across the country, not including webinars, and we had over 42,000 people actually sit in and attend in person. So
wow.
It was a very, very successful event, no matter which way you look at it.
That's great. I was unsuccessful in not introducing Tammy Flanagan, Senior Benefit Director, NITP, a big fan of Long-Term Care Partners. Gov exec, columnist, what else don't you do?
That's it.
Yeah.
Good morning,
Tammy. It's been a while. It's good to see you.
It has been a while. You forgot, out of sight, out of mind.
No, how could I ever forget you? So I apologize.
That's okay.
Do you know how I get nervous when I do
that? That's fine.
Okay.
I was just going to ask Paul to remind everybody, because I know we talk so much about this open season event that was held this year, but yet when employees and retirees ask, can they still sign up or do we have to wait till the next open season, what do you tell them?
Oh, of course they can sign up. They can sign up right now.
It's open all the time.
It's open all the time, but they have to use what we refer to as a full underwriting form, which is ask more questions of them, probably about 40 altogether, and they may be asked for medical evidence. During the open season, they were able to apply using an abbreviated underwriting form, which asked only 7 questions, 9 if you were a spouse or a domestic partner. So it was obviously easier to apply during open season. But that doesn't mean that if you're in reasonable health for your age, you can't enroll in the program today.
Even if you have a pre-existing condition, just leave it up to the underwriters to check it out for
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
Right, because I've had people who are afraid to sign up because they've been turned down for life insurance. But that doesn't necessarily mean they'll be turned down for long-term care. Is that right?
Well, it depends on what it is. I mean, if you are already receiving services in a nursing home, if you are already ADL dependent, if you already have Alzheimer's, you would have been disqualified during the open season period.
Even.
And certainly you would be disqualified or not approved during the non-open season.
One thing I encourage folks to do is to go to ltcfeds.com and download the application. The best thing to do is look at the application. You'll see all the conditions up front. You'll know what's a knockout question, what isn't, and you just kind of go from there. Most people, though, who applied with a full underwriting, most people are given coverage. You just have to go through the process.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to take no test. Finally, after listening to Tam and you all these years, and Tom as well, I bought some. And I had to take a test, and this test part part of it was, you know, how old are you? I never think of how old I am. I had to stop, and I gave them the wrong answer. and then
they
gave
you for dementia.
That's what they were doing. And then the next thing was they give you 10 words, and they say, okay, apple, use it in a sentence. Pear, use it in a sentence.
You're kidding. Wow.
Yeah. And then towards the end, they go, tell us what the 10 words were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They didn't ask you who the president was.
Do we have one?
But that wasn't the federal plan. The federal plan doesn't ask those kind of questions.
No, that's what I'm trying to say. So yeah. It's
well, we actually might do when you fill out the full underwriting application, depending upon how you answer questions or what shows up in your medical records. We actually might do a telephone interview or an onset assessment. It really just depends.
Oh, I think we did it on about 5%.
Good news for me.
I think we did it on about 5% of those people who submitted applications,
depending
and that's
on
at the discretion of the underwriter. What they're looking for again is average age for your health, not perfect health.
Right.
Now, may I ask you a question? We talked about this in the proverbial green room. People that are on the fence, I mean, the people that you have stay with you, but the people that are on the fence, you got to get them off the fence. So there might be some people, and because of the way I think, because I'm an accountant, I say, why do I need this? Not why do I need it, but why would I need to spend the money? What is it going to return to me? And Paul and Beth, you had some great answers to that in the green room. So I'm on the fence here. Convince me that I need it. Or not convince me, just push me.
Well, Bob, you don't need this if you are really comfortable, independently wealthy, with substantial personal assets, and you could pay out for your care several $100,000 over the next few years without worrying about it in any way. You don't need it if, as Mike Cause, the wittily says, you are planning to die in your sleep. You don't need it if you believe that the federal government will cover all of your long-term care needs when you have those needs and in a way that you prefer. Then you probably don't need it either. If you don't fall into one of those categories, then it's something that you should consider, and you should certainly consider it by the time you hit age 50.
Uh-oh.
And I don't know if Beth wants to add or Tammy wants to add anything to that.
Well, I mean, what I hear from the field all the time from people who purchase this coverage, it has to do with their kids and their family. They've had a personal situation with a parent, an in-law, and they just never want to put their kids through it. And that's really the deciding factor that makes them pull the trigger.
Yeah, I was at a health fair on Saturday, which you guys were there as well, Beth and Paul, and that as well. But I was at this health fair, which attracted mostly retirees to the fair, and there were three situations. They had this presentation session up front where there were some speeches given and OPM was there, and they were talking about health insurance, and there were three different people who asked questions that dealt with the fact that they had a spouse or one that had a child, somebody else had themselves. A situation where they came out of the hospital and they were sent to rehab, and they were so surprised that most of the federal health plans cover little to nothing for that type of care. And the one gentleman, his wife needed extended care. So after the 20 days that Medicare covered ran out, he was out of pocket.
Sure.
And he couldn't figure out, you know, why health insurance didn't cover that. But, you know, when I talk about it in seminars, I always say, well, that's kind of where long-term care picks up, where health insurance leaves off. In a situation like that, especially if it's going to be extended care for 9 months or a year or even several years.
Sure. And I think that's the right way to respond. Medical care is geared to short-term or acute care. You have a condition, you have a serious medical need requiring intervention. It's expected that there will be a resolution. It's expected that there will be a recovery. You're sent to rehabilitation for a specific period of time so that you can recover from a hip surgery or a serious injury of some kind. But it's always anticipated that there is a resolution. Mm-hmm. Long-term care is that series of or set of services that you need when you're not expected to be able to make a successful transition back to a state of health. When you have a chronic ailment or disability that is impairing you, is impairing you physically, is impairing you perhaps mentally, and you will not be able to take care of yourself. Medicare wasn't designed to cover that. Most health plans are not designed to cover that kind of thing.
And this is compounded with the aging process. So at the age of 42, if I were to break my arm or fall, I'm going to recover. If I'm 82, there's a different issue. How can I get back on my feet? I may not be able to.
It could be a much longer recovery.
Right.
In structuring premiums, do you have different wait periods that would, if you waited longer, your premium would be less before it kicks in?
Waiting period to use benefits?
Mm-hmm.
We actually have a cross-the-board 90 calendar day waiting period for the FELTSIP 2.0 plan.
Okay, but that's it. 90. There's no option to go to 180 or.
We have 90, but Bob, there is a correlation between the actual premium and the amount of time that you're going to wait before you can access benefits. And then there's also whether those days are service days or they're calendar days. Under the federal program, it's 90 calendar days. Some programs, such as the earlier FELTSIP 1.0, were service days. If you had a 360-day waiting period, that would certainly reduce your premium, but many people don't want that kind of wait because then they'd still have a fairly substantial out-of-pocket expense. They could be running up a bill of tens of thousands of dollars in that first year waiting for their benefits to kick in, and that's generally deemed to be unsatisfactory from the consumer standpoint.
I'm with you. Just asking. Because some people are premium phobic, and I'm going to put it off a year, I'm going to put it off 6 months. And
well, no, the other big fear I hear about premiums is, we did go through the situation where the premiums did have an increase that was, mm-hmm. by a lot of employees, unexpected over the past few years. Mm-hmm. So employees are a little bit gun-shy about the future and the chance of increasing premiums in the future or how stable the current rate structure is. Is there anything you can speak to that?
Well, sure. As you noted, back in March of 2010, the FELTSIP did have a sizable increase. More than 154,000 people were affected. They were the people who had purchased the automatic compound increase option. The reason is simply that the actuarial assumptions had changed, particularly those around persistency and investment. It was already becoming a very difficult, very challenging investment environment, as I'm sure everyone is aware. And that affected the amount of reserves that we're building in the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Experience Fund. So it was determined that we needed to raise the premiums for the fund stability. OPM agreed. They brought in an independent actuarial consultant, looked at it, studied it. The consultant agreed that the premiums needed to be raised, and so we did that. Now, interestingly, though, we offered some choices, some options, whereby you could avoid the premium increase if you were willing to take a benefit reduction. And there were different reductions offered. The popular one was moving from a 5% automatic compound increase to a 4%. That allowed many tens of thousands of people to avoid the increase altogether. So at the end of the day, we had about 46,000 who chose to stay in the original 1.0 and take the rate increase. We had another 46% who chose to move to the 4% mm-hmm. in either the new plan 1.0 or the old plan 1.0 or the new one 2.0.
Right.
Now, you all are going to be at the health fairs, correct?
We've been out there, sure.
Okay, so I mean, this is kind of like one stop. You can do the medical insurance. You can do the long-term care insurance.
Yeah, the agencies do a great job. They get a lot of different vendors in there, even FSA Feds, Benefeds as well, which is the portal to sign up for FedVIP. So there's a one-stop shop for employees at health.
Everything's kind of interrelated. Health insurance kind of related to long-term care and dental and vision. So
and
you kind of need to look at the overall picture.
Yep, this is the time where people make decisions about their plans. So.
Also, Tammy, you mentioned you were at one Saturday. Mm-hmm. Now, that probably was not at an agency.
No, this is locally here in the D.C. area. We have some of our elected representatives who sponsor health fairs, mainly for retirees, but anybody's welcome to come. We had a really good turnout, I thought, at the one Saturday at the Fairfax County Government Center. Mm-hmm. And that happens every year. This year, it's Congressman Connolly, and then in Maryland, it's Congressman
Ben Holland.
Ben Holland, who does the one in Montgomery County. So those are well-attended events and places for retirees to come and learn about the different plans that are available.
I would think it would be popular in big government towns, Denver, L.A., Chicago.
Right.
But I don't know. Yeah. I would think so. Well, do you all go there on Saturdays?
We'll go anywhere. But we actually work closely with the federal executive boards, which are in 28 major cities across the country, in major federal buildings. And we'll spend a lot of time cross-agency events where they have like 4,000 or 5,000 employees in one building. It's a great way to hit them all.
The federal buildings in the big cities.
Yeah.
And if you miss the health fairs, there's a wealth of information that you can link to long-term care and health insurance plans, Aetna, any of the plans at opm.gov. And if you go to opm.gov/insure, the word INSURE, you'll come to, like, they call it the landing page where you can find long-term care link, health benefit link, life insurance, any insurance that OPM sponsors is linked up there. And it's a good place to get additional information if you didn't get a chance to go to the health fair.
All righty. How about phone numbers? Can somebody contact y'all on a phone number?
Yep, it's very easy. It's 1-800-LTC-FEDS. And most importantly, the website is ltcfeds.com. And if you want to watch a webinar, we're doing them through mid-December. It's ltcfeds.com/webinar.
ltcfeds.com.
/webinar. Thanks, Bob.
Bob, one thing to note, I think this is very interesting. Some 80% of all of the 45,000 plus new enrollees enrolled online using our website. So in other words, they may have talked to someone at some point, but when it came time to actually enrolling, they did so electronically without paper. And it was efficient. It was easy. It was fast. All of the tools are on that site that they could use to help them make an informed decision. And I think you're going to see more and more people going that way.
Yeah, I was talking to a retiree Saturday, and she was telling me that she would love to have long-term care insurance, but because she's older, you know, she's retired, and because her retirement's not huge, that she didn't think she could afford it. But I know that in the federal plan, you can buy anything from $50 a day benefit.
It's actually a little bit more now.
$100. That's right. $100 is the minimum.
Yep.
Up to $450, and then the benefit period can be anywhere as little as 2 years.
Yeah. And especially for a retiree, they would need less inflation protection, so they would opt for the future purchase option that strips out inflation protection. You pay as you go, basically. It makes their overall premium more affordable.
At 21% of those people who enrolled in the recent open season bought the 2-year plan.
Yeah, and
so
that's
I think
still
the people
may not
looking,
cover the full cost of care, but it's going to save a lot of your out of pocket and give you some of the other services available.
And it will get you access to the services of your choice, because one of the first things that you get asked when you start shopping around for services is whether you have some kind of private insurance.
Yeah, I took my mother-in-law on a tour, and that was the first question I asked at the retirement community is, does she have long-term care insurance?
So a lot of people think it's prohibitively expensive. It really isn't. People who are in their 60s can purchase, depending on the options that they get, and whether they get the future purchase option and they adjust as they go along, or whether they take one of the automatic compound increase varieties. But they can buy it for under $1,000 a year.
And wouldn't that also give them access to the caregiver training benefit and the home modification benefits as well?
Oh, yes.
Absolutely. No matter what sort of level of benefits you have, you're always going to have access to the care coordination. These are the registered nurses that will help you and your family through the long-term care maze, finding reputable providers. The stay-at-home benefit, which we talked about on a previous show, that preps your home for a long-term care event during your waiting period. And then all the protections of the program, OPM oversight, experience fund protection. All of that's included. No
I think
what
that
level.
Has some value in itself, even if you can't afford enough coverage to cover the full cost of your care. I think that shouldn't be overlooked.
I think that's a very good way to look at it, Tammy, because in many other areas of life, we don't protect for 100%.
Right.
Few people have enough life insurance to satisfy your typical life insurance agent who will ask you how many multiples of salary you have at a certain age. Few people check their homeowners' policies and make sure they're protected for the kinds of disasters that they can experience. And the list goes on and on and on. Many people don't have disability. So one size doesn't fit all in long-term care. And I think that if you buy from a quality program like the federal program, you can buy a more modest level of coverage and still be assured that you're doing a good thing for yourself and your family, even if it doesn't cover every single last dollar of your risk.
Yeah, I think I agree with that.
Okay.
So,
All right, so what else? During the open season, did you gather any information that was, I won't say you were unaware of, but you saw that maybe there was a thread that ran through a lot of people that you weren't aware of before for marketing purposes or for helping purposes?
Mm-hmm. Average age of folks who applied for active employees was 53. That skewed up a little bit. Usually throughout the year, it's around 51, 52. I'm actually not too surprised by what people bought. They bought solid middle-of-the-road coverage. Mm-hmm. They bought a basic daily benefit amount of $150 or $200 a day. That's what long-term care costs. Most of them bought a three-year benefit period, and an overwhelming majority bought 4% inflation protection, which is in line with the CPIU has done for the last 50 years. They went straight down the middle. That's what they bought, and the average premium is about $125 a month.
I know some of those people. We were sitting on the same fence. Say that a little bit, because if the age went up, it's people that had heard it, yeah, and then, yeah, well, boy, the doors are open. Let's go in.
Yeah, well, right. A couple of things to note. First of all, the age at which many people are retiring completely, even feds, has gone up. As you all know, this was something that slid really since the Second World War right up until the early 90s, where a small percentage continued to work after age 65. It's now many people are saying either that they feel they need to work or they ought to work in order to be comfortable. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see the age go up a little. And the other thing that surprised me, though, was given the seriousness of the current economic downturn, how many people responded very positively to this offer. They must have thought to themselves, well, I'm going to have to cut corners somewhere, but I'm not going to cut corners here because I understand the value of the protection that I'm buying. And that was a little bit of a surprise to me. We did wonder at the beginning whether economic conditions were going to discourage people from considering it.
You know what it's really like? Life insurance for the living.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, there was some, I remember in the president's health care reform bill, there was some talk about having a national long-term care insurance program. Did something happen to that? And what's the status of that? And how does that affect our federal long-term care plan?
Yes, you're talking about CLASS, the Community Living Assistance Services and Support Act, which was part of the Affordable Care Act. This is a program that was to be sponsored by and managed by HHS. And it was aimed at covering the working disabled. It was going to be open to all Americans, but it was really going to be geared to the working disabled. There was no medical evidence underwriting, but you did have a five-year waiting period.
A five-year
waiting period. Problem
You'd
is
be bankrupt
that,
by then.
Problem is that the actuaries who were working on the program and those who were not working on the program that were observing exchanges started to challenge the premium adequacy of the pricing over the long term. And eventually the Obama administration decided to withdraw support, including funding. This was last month. Now, a bill has been filed in the House to repeal the legislation. It's still the law of the land, mm-hmm. but there is a bill that has been filed to repeal the legislation. A few Democrats, led by Frank Pallone of New Jersey, are seeking to convene. He's the ranking member on the House Energy and Commerce Committee Subcommittee, which has been doing this investigation. And he's trying to convene an independent advisory council to try to salvage the program, ask what changes can be made. But most observers think that effort will not be successful.
Well, I think the main thing is that recognizes the fact that long-term care is an issue for our whole country, that we're an aging society and we need to start thinking about our future.
Absolutely. And it does mean that the federal long-term care insurance program remains an important model, because it's the only national and uniform model program out there, and it is the largest. So it's something that if you're thinking about it at all, about the whole question of long-term care financing, and you're a Fed, you really need to look at this
opportunity. If I know nothing else about insurance, I know that there's strength in numbers. So you have a large plan, a lot of participants, that
Absolutely.
Means that's a pretty strong plan.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All righty. It's about time probably to do the switch over here, and this is going to be very delicate. So final comments, Beth, Paul?
Well, thank you both for having us. We were with you during the open season, so it's great to come back and review some results. But again, just to remind folks that they can always apply. Their qualified relatives can always apply, even if they don't. And just look at the website, ltcfeds.com, just for more information.
ltcfeds.com.
Right? I'm from Boston. Talk fast.
And Bob, thank you very much. Thank you and Tammy for having us back. We always enjoy doing this program, and we appreciate your interest and the interest of your audience in looking at ways to protect yourself from the high risk of long-term care need, whether you buy insurance or not. The important thing is to give it serious thought, because it is an important factor in your retirement planning security.
Okay, good. And we'll have you back in the spring, I'm sure, after we go through all that finance stuff at the beginning of the year for tax season.
And Bob, if anybody has any follow-up questions, they can always send an email in, because we do. And Beth and Tom are both very gracious to answer those if there's ones we can't handle. So feel free to contact us at
For
Your Benefit.
F-O-R.
F-O-R.
Y-O-U-R. Benefit.
At.
N-I-T-P-I-N-C. Dot com.
Very nice.
For Your Benefit at NITPINC. And people say, well, what's NITP? Well, that's the company that sponsors its show. It's a short name for National Institute of Transition Planning. We're not shrinks, but we are pre-retirement, mid-career, and beginning career seminar presenters in D.C. and around the country and around the world.
That's right.
Okay. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
And
thank you,
now we're going to shine the spotlights on the good folks from Aetna. So from Aetna, we have Sally Scanlon and Alexis Meyer. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
So, all right, Tammy, you're good with these questions. I'm not so great with these questions. So,
okay, we're just making a little switcheroo on the microphone situation here so that everybody can speak. Yeah, I was very curious and very happy to have Aetna coming in as a guest during this open season, because throughout the year when I teach pre-retirement seminars, we talk about health insurance and continuation of health insurance into retirement. It's a major federal benefit. And what I find a lot of employees don't always understand is, number one, during open season, there are many choices. You know, it seems like we tend to be creatures of habit and stay with the same plan for 30 years. I have an uncle who's been in Blue Cross for 56 years. So they just don't want to switch. And then the other thing is, we have new things that are available. And Aetna's one of the forerunners in something that I think is relatively new and very interesting about health benefits, and that is the high deductible version. So I was hoping that during this time we have together, we can speak to that and also bring up anything about this open season, changes to Aetna for next year that are interesting or that employees might want to hear about or retirees might want to hear about as well.
Definitely. So first, you hit on a great point. Federal employees don't like to switch health plans, and we find that maybe 4 or 5% of feds switch every year. And it is something that's so important and people should look at. And with the holiday coming up this week, maybe you have a little bit of extra time, do some reading. There's a lot of options available. And the Aetna Health Fund High Deductible Plan is a great, great plan. This plan for a single enrollment costs in the neighborhood of $90 a month. You get $62.50 back through a premium pass-through in a health savings account. So this money goes in tax-free to a health savings account that belongs to you. It earns interest. If you don't use it by the end of the year, it rolls over to the next year. If you ever decide to leave the plan, you keep the money in the health savings account. And it works just like a regular PPO-type plan. You have a deductible to meet, and after that, you pay coinsurance for your care, copay for prescription drugs, and you have that money in the health savings account to help you offset the deductible. The best part is you can make additional contributions from your paycheck tax-free to build up your health savings account, so you can build it up right to your deductible limit or even above, and so you really have an affordable plan where you can actually save some money and sock it away for future medical care expenses.
Right. Yeah, I want to just take a moment and just kind of go back over that just for a minute, because what employees are more familiar with, I think, is the idea of having a flexible spending account. And we've had that for about 10 years now under the premium conversion benefit. So employees do participate in flexible spending accounts. They're not open to retirees, which is a shame, but the retirees can't do that. So when we talk about flexible spending accounts and the use it or lose it provision of that, where if you don't spend it, the money's gone, that's when I like to bring up the high deductible plans, because if you have a high deductible health plan, then you can set up what you were just talking about, which is the health care savings account.
Exactly. And you don't lose it.
You don't lose it. It's a bank account, right?
Yeah.
And does Aetna use a bank, or how does that work?
Yes, we work with JP Morgan Chase. Mm-hmm. And that so when you sign up for the high deductible health plan, you're automatically enrolled in the health savings account. We set that account up for you. And as I said, it's funded each month, $62.50 a month for a single enrollment, $125 a month for a family enrollment.
Now, if I have other health insurance, maybe my spouse works in private industry and has me covered under his plan, or maybe we're a military family, we have TRICARE, or maybe we're retired with Medicare. If we have that, we can still get the premium rebate or the premium pass-through, as you call it, but we can't contribute any of our own dollars.
Well, actually, it's a little bit more, you can't get the health savings account at all if mm-hmm. you have other coverage that's not a high deductible plan. So if you have Medicare, for example, mm-hmm. you're not eligible for a health savings account. What you can do, though, is you can sign up for the high deductible health plan, and then we give you a health reimbursement account, HRA. And this is not a tax advantage savings account. It's an insurance benefit. It does roll over, but it doesn't earn interest, and it's not something that you can, if you ever leave the plan, you could take with you. It's still a great deal for a lot of people, though, mm-hmm. especially retirees, because it's a very affordable plan. You can actually combine a high deductible health plan with an HRA, with a flexible spending account for those who are eligible for that, too. Yep. But you can have an HSA if you have other insurance that's not high deductible.
Right. And I noticed on your website, which is it Aetna Feds?
Aetna Feds.
Dot com.
Aetna Feds. How do you spell Aetna?
AETNAFEDS.com. AetnaFeds.com.
Okay. Now that we spelled that, we have alphabet soup here. So let me make sure I understand this. I have a high deductible health care plan. What's the acronym for that?
HDHP.
Okay. Just for now, these people that are listening to this or read this later go, what's that? Okay, that's what that is. But what it does then is it's a high deductible, which means your premiums go down. You go, well, that means I don't get as much coverage. Well, yes, you do, and no, you don't. But if you put money aside into a health savings account, HSA, it's like an IRA. It really is like an IRA. It's not like a use or lose with a flexible spending account, but let's leave that out. Let's focus in on this. And that can grow over the years. And I know some folks, and I'm sure you all do too, that don't use that. They mm-hmm. take it out of their pocket because this is a tax-deferred investment. It really is. And if you never use it, you can take it out and pay taxes on it.
Not even really tax deferred, tax free, because when you take it out, you don't pay tax as long as you spend it on health care.
Right, but if you pay the health care out of your pocket rather than take it out of this growing asset eventually is going to get taxed, but it goes to you if you want to take it out.
Or the way I look at it, too, is while you're still working and you have a higher income, I like the idea of, you know, socking away that tax-free money in your HSA account, max it out to the limit, which for self only is
$3,100
a year next
Correct.
Year. And yep. for self and family, it's over $6,250.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of money to set aside that lowers your taxable income while you're working. And then in your retirement years, when you may not have as much discretionary income, then you can spend that money on your out-of-pocket health care expenses. In fact, as time goes by, I think under tax code, you can start spending it on long-term care insurance premiums.
Absolutely.
As time
Love
goes by.
And for younger employees, it's nice to have, for a pregnancy or a big surgery, to have that money stocked aside to know that you can cover.
You know, always have a little slush fund for health care.
Any big expense that you weren't expecting.
That's right. So I think it's a neat idea, but I just think employees aren't familiar with it. They're not comfortable with it. You don't know many people who have used it, so there are little gun shy mm-hmm. To start with, but I think the people who I've met who use it seem to be very happy.
Yeah, if you can take a few minutes to do the math and look at the premium you pay and the premium pass-through that we discussed, the tax advantages, and then another great thing about our plan is that we use Aetna's PPO network for the plan. You can go in-network, out-of-network for coverage, so you have that flexibility. It's available in all 50 states. You get your preventive care covered at 100%, cleanings and x-rays covered at the dentist. All of that is part of the plan as well.
It's part of that plan, not a separate dental plan, but part of the health plan.
Cleanings and x-rays, your basic preventive care covered under the plan in full when you use Aetna participating providers.
All right. How does a potential enrollee know if their doc is in your group?
We have at our website, aetnafeds.com, we have a provider directory online. People can go there, call our customer service. That's 877-459-6604. And our customer service reps would be happy to check a doctor for them as well.
So I could give them my list of five or six doctors and then see if
Absolutely.
They're part of the network?
Yeah.
Hey, that's an easy way to do it.
Yeah.
Give them a lot to do today if people start calling. Now, Aetna has different types of health plans. High deductible is not the only thing Aetna offers. So what are the different health plans offered through Aetna?
Yeah, we have a very popular open access HMO plan. It's available in about 13 different markets across the country. Our biggest open access HMO plan is actually right here in the DC area. This is a great plan if you're looking for something with predictable costs. Just pay a copay for most services, pay a copay for your prescription drugs, and here again in the DC, Maryland, Virginia area, great price.
Mm-hmm.
We do also offer a consumer-driven health plan. This is a plan where you get a medical fund up front to pay your medical expenses to a certain point. Then you have a deductible, and after that, you would pay a percentage of care, you know, a percentage of
Does
your
the consumer-driven plan act as an HMO or a PPO, or is it both?
That uses Aetna's PPO network as well, so you have mm-hmm. coverage in-network or out-of-network.
So similar to the high-deductible version,
yes.
But no HSA account.
Correct.
Okay.
And one of the nice things about our HMO is that it's no referral, so you don't need a referral to go see a specialist.
Oh, okay.
Or
so you can just call your cardiologist to make the appointment rather than go right. to your primary care physician first.
Exactly.
Yeah, that can also get frustrating, I think, for some people.
Yeah.
Now, to be able to distinguish which plan is best for me, I think Aetna has a tool to help you decide.
We have a great tool. It's called the Benefit Advisor, and it's kind of fun, too. If you go to aetnafeds.com and click on the Benefit Advisor link, we have a virtual advisor. His name is David. He'll ask you a few questions and try to help guide you to what plan might work for you. And you know, as we're talking about the high deductible plan, that sounds a little bit scary. But the way David asks the questions, he's gauging your comfort level with out-of-pocket costs and to see if that plan might be right for you.
I know Walt Francis, we've had him on the show many times.
He's coming next week.
Coming next week. Hey, that's a good lead-in for him. But he writes the annual guide to health plans for federal employees that comes out. And he always ranks Aetna one of the highest plans economically as far as your overall out-of-pocket expense and so forth. So that's good.
Again. You know,
good endorsement coming yep. from Walt Francis that he does that.
And with all of the plans that Sally's been talking about, the HMO, the CDHP, the HCHE, they all come with perks, discounts. So discounts for gym memberships, massage therapy, chiropractic care, acupuncture, weight loss programs, the list goes on. But all of that comes with all of the medical
plans. All the
plans.
Different plans. Those are good, but I think the main reason why I get health insurance is for catastrophic expense. You know, what if somebody ends up with a stroke, or what if somebody needs hip replacement, or what if somebody has a car accident? So can you address the difference in catastrophic coverage on the HMO plan versus the other types of plans, the consumer-driven
sure,
and high-deductible?
They're actually very similar. And it's funny, you know, when I'm out at health fairs, I'm surprised that more feds don't realize that all the plans do have catastrophic protection.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it makes people feel a little bit better.
Knowing that you're limited to how much you're going to spend in the event of a disaster.
Right, exactly. And so for our high deductible health plan and for our HMO, our basic option, which is our very popular option here in the DC area, the out-of-pocket maxes are the same, $4,000 for single enrollment and $8,000 for family. So you'll know that once you pay that much out-of-pocket, Aetna covers everything beyond that and all federal carriers have out-of-pocket maxes. It may be different, mm-hmm. but it is there and built in the plan, and it's something people should look at as well.
Right. And with the high-deductible plan, is the catastrophic limit structured differently, that different things are included in that, whereas with other types of health plans, like your deductible isn't included? So I think with your HMO style and high-deductible, everything counts towards the catastrophic.
Correct.
That's
exactly.
covered under the plan.
That's right.
So that kind of, it sounds like a big limit, but it really isn't when you figure out
right.
you're going to pay your deductible out of pocket anyway.
Absolutely.
Does coverage include all the 50 states?
On our high deductible health plan, yes. Both of our consumer-driven options, the HDHP and CDHP, are available in all 50 states. You're even covered outside of the country. Emergencies, anytime, anywhere, but for routine care, coverage out of the country would be paid at the out-of-network benefit level.
Okay, that was going to be my next question, so thanks.
Yeah, when we announced the show, we got an email came in.
Yeah.
And Simone, I guess, is from the Phoenix-Tucson area of the country, and she wrote in, and she first asked about the increase in the price for the Aetna family plan from last year to next year, or this year to next year. in that particular area of the country, the premium's going up 50%, which, you know, kind of disappointed her, and she was wondering why, you know, what justifies such a major price increase for that plan.
Yeah, we do offer our open access HMO in about 13 different areas across the country, and in Arizona is in one area where the rates went up significantly. The average rate for the HMO increase was about 9%. Very small increase here in the D.C. area, but a large increase out there. And a couple of different things factor into that. One, the rates are based on the actual claim costs and utilization in that particular plan. And unfortunately, as the rates go up, people in the plan tend to look for lower cost plans with maybe higher out-of-pocket costs. As they move out of the plan, the rates for those left in the plan get a little higher, and then one other important factor is the government contributes 72% of the premium, and you pay the remainder. But it's 72% of the weighted average of premiums in the entire program. So in certain areas, once the premium gets to a certain level, the government maxes out their contribution at 75%. So any increase beyond that is going to be paid by the member, and that exacerbates the rate increase for them. So it is unfortunate that the rates are...
Yeah, and I think another influencing factor might be the fact that our federal plan covers both active employees and retirees, and retirees sometimes enroll in Medicare, sometimes they don't. They don't have to because the health plans still cover them even if they don't take Medicare after age 65. So I imagine that's going to increase costs where you have high numbers of retirees without Medicare.
Definitely. And you also have to remember that typically, the benefits in an HMO plan are some of the richest in the federal program. In Arizona, for example, you pay a copay for everything, hospital, prescriptions, doctor visits. That's it, just a copay. You do get the rich benefits.
I was listening to Walt Francis talk about, he mentioned Aetna at the health fair and was promoting it in a way. But he was talking about when people were asking about skilled nursing care, he said that he felt that the HMO style plans offer better skilled nursing care benefits than some of the fee-for-service plans. Is that true with Aetna? Do you know what, I don't know if you know off the top of your head, what your skilled nursing care benefit is. But for a retiree, that could be a big issue since sometimes we need hip replacement or sometimes we have a stroke and sometimes we need that period of rehab after our hospitalization. So might be something that could drive the price up, but also drive your cost down out of pocket.
Yeah, we actually pay 20% of our plan allowance, or the member would pay 20% of the plan allowance for home care or skilled nursing care. There can be limits on that. You can call our customer service line to get the specifics, 877-459-6604. So I can speak to our benefits, but not so much the competitive benefits.
But I would think the way that works is if you came out of the hospital, needed the rehab coverage, and the doctor recommended it, it sounds like from the way that reads it, Aetna would cover it as long as the doctor says it's necessary.
Yes.
Where some fee-for-service plans won't cover it no matter what. So I think that's something to be considered. Even though the price might be higher, your out-of-pocket expense could be much lower.
Absolutely.
In cases where you have those kind of expenses or high out-of-pocket.
Absolutely.
How does your prescription reimbursement work? Do they go to a local pharmacy? Is it mailed to the individual? And what's the copay with it?
Sure. And they can go to the local retail pharmacy on our open access HMO basic option here in D.C. You pay $10 for a generic drug, $35 for a brand name drug, and $65 for drugs that are not on our formulary list. You can use mail order if you want. You can get a 90-day supply for two copays. So it can be a good deal for some people, but you don't have to.
Mm-hmm. That was what I was I responded to Simone before today just to tell her about the high deductible plan that for her area that could be a big money saver if she's a candidate for that. And so she followed up with a question about that dealt with prescriptions. And she said, for several years now through Aetna, I've gotten a 90-day prescription and paid cash at retail, $10 for 90 days, as you just said. But would I be allowed to use my HSA debit card if she has a healthcare savings account debit card to pay for those prescriptions just like she does now?
Yep, absolutely. And so the thing to remember, though, when you have the high deductible plan, until you meet your deductible, you're paying the Aetna negotiated cost for the drug, not a copay.
Mm-hmm.
So you do have to keep that in mind when you're doing the math and maybe studying up on the plans over this next week. Take a look at that and think about the prescriptions you take, the doctors you see. You can do a little math, figure out how long it'll take you to hit your deductible.
And her last question was, since she's going to be paying upfront costs to meet her deductible, just as you just mentioned, how do I ensure that I am paying the Aetna negotiated rate rather than the doctor's billed charges? So how does she know she's still getting that Aetna rate?
Yeah, that's a great question. It is very important when you go to the doctor to identify yourself as an Aetna member. Show them your card so that they know that they must submit the claim to Aetna first and make sure you get the negotiated rate. Once you go, you'll see your explanation of benefits, or EOB. That's something you can see online, and you can be sure that you receive the Aetna negotiated rate by reading your EOB.
So if I sign up for Aetna this open season, and the coverage actually takes effect January 1st, when will that HSA account be established? Is there something I have to do to make that happen? How do I fund it? You know, can you talk a little bit about how that works?
So this year, because for most federal employees, coverage begins on 1-1, which isn't always the case,
right,
the HSA will be effective on 1-1. So the first contribution of, let's just use a single example, $62.50, would go in around the middle of the month. You'll receive a welcome kit in the mail with all the information. You'll receive your debit card. And you generally don't have to do anything except for fill out a beneficiary designation form, a couple of little things, and the HSA is set up for you. Mm-hmm. If you want to do a voluntary contribution, a tax-free contribution from your paycheck, you do have to talk to your benefit office at work or your payroll office. Some agencies allow you to do
payroll deduction.
Not all. Some do. You can also make a contribution at any time.
You just mail a check-in.
Or do electronic funds transfer from your checking or savings account.
So if you needed to either fill a prescription or visit the doctor, let's say January 3rd or 4th, and we haven't received our debit card yet and we don't have the information about our HSA account, then we just wait to pay that bill, or can we get reimbursed once we have it set up?
Yep, you can pay the bill and then get reimbursed once you have your HSA set up. And you can use your debit card in a Mac machine to take money out, just, you know, like that, or
pay for medical
expenses. Yeah.
And that money comes out tax-free as long as it's used for medical expense.
Exactly. So it's important to save your receipts, keep a folder. You don't have to submit a receipt to be reimbursed from your HSA. But if the IRS ever wants to take a look at
how
you spent the money, keep those receipts.
So who?
The tax people, right, Bob?
Right. In 2012, is there anything new that somebody that was on the fence last open season that didn't jump on your side of the fence that you would entice, or 2012 people that are in your wheelhouse, if you will be excited about?
Well, I think, as I said, here in the D.C. area, people will be very excited because on our open access HMO, our high option plan, and some federal employees love that high option where they only pay a copay for everything, the rates have actually gone down. Our basic option, open access HMO, which is very, very popular, has a very small rate increase, but there are no referrals. And I can't tell you how many times we're at health fairs and people still say, what? No referrals? Mm-hmm. They love that because most people know when they need to see a specialist, a dermatologist, a cardiologist.
They don't want to have to go through the whole process.
They don't need to get permission.
Right.
So I think that's key. And then as Alexis mentioned earlier, we do have these great money-saving discounts that are part of the plan. Even our federal dental plan has it. You can get discounts on weight loss programs and massage therapy. And you know, it seems like at the beginning of the year, everybody's looking for ways to get fit, lose weight. So there's some great discount programs that people can use to accomplish those goals.
It's good to know, too. Could you speak, I know we don't have a whole lot of time left, but just a moment or two about whether or not a retiree needs to get Medicare Part B if they have Aetna?
It's something that it's, just as we were talking about doing the math in terms of selecting benefits, they really need to sit down and look at their situation and the plan that they have. With Aetna, there are some services that are that kind of overlap as far as Medicare Part B coverage and the Aetna coverage. But there are other things, for example, if the retiree travels a lot, when you're in the open access HMO, you do have to use participating providers. Medicare Part B might be helpful if you're in an area outside of where Aetna's network is.
Because then you can go outside of that
care. But yeah, but it's an important decision mm-hmm. and an individual decision, and really depends on your circumstances.
Right. Yeah, because that's always a big issue for retirees. What do I do to be or not to be when it comes to Medicare? Because Part A is paid for. You've already paid for it. But the Part B always is a dilemma, and it's a hard one to answer.
Is massage a new thing within? I didn't mean it the way that came out. But, I mean, they have these franchises now for massage. I mean, legitimate massages. And I guess for the stress level of people, or does it help with any particular ailment? But, you know, we didn't talk about that 5 years ago.
Yeah, I just think it's our society. We're stressed out and we need to relax.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's a great stress reliever. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Just interested.
Yeah. Anyhow, so are you guys keeping busy during this open season?
Definitely. And I was thinking about another great feature of our plans that we introduced a couple years ago. We have an online health risk assessment that our members can take on our consumer-driven plan, our CDHP. Members actually get a $50 incentive added to their medical fund if they complete the health risk assessment. Go online, answer some questions about your health. It gives you a personalized report on your situation, things that you can do to improve your health. Again, with our consumer-driven plan members, they also complete an online wellness program. And once they do that, they would get the $50 added to their fund. But it's great because that health risk assessment feeds to a lot of the different Aetna programs like disease management, where maybe we'll identify someone as a diabetic or someone with asthma or certain situations where we can help by getting a nurse engaged with them to help them meet their health goals.
So preventative care is stressed.
Yep.
Is electronic record keeping part of Aetna so people participate can check their records online?
Yeah, we do have a personal health record, and all of our members have access to it. It's a great tool because it's fed not only by your claims and lab and pharmacy data, but you can also add personal information like your health history, and you have that right at your fingertips.
Good. Okay, well, to bring this down to a slow landing, we have a little bit over a minute to go. Comments that would draw somebody to Aetna. Can't say anything bad about anybody else, but what makes you stand out?
Okay, well, open access HMO, great price. Just pay a copay for most services. No referrals needed. We have a great, strong network in this area. And we talked a lot about the high deductible health plan, HDHP. This is a deal you can't beat. You get about two-thirds of the money that you pay in premium back in a premium pass-through that goes right into a health savings account that you own, earns interest, rolls over when you don't use it. I highly encourage people to take a look at it. It's a great deal.
Okay, I think we're running out of gas here. All righty, so nice to have you all. And the folks listening can see them at the health fairs. Thanks, and Walt Francis is on next week with Tammy?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I think so.
I hope so. Anyway, bye-bye, y'all.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.